Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. One of the cardinal principles of Christianity is a benevolent spirit and action by Christians. As one studies the scripture, he learns that the work of the church falls into three main categories. 1. Preaching to the lost that they might be saved. 2. Edifying the saved that they might grow and remain faithful. And 3. Ministering to those who are in need, both saint and sinner, as opportunity affords. When any of the three are neglected, to that extent the cause and the purpose of Christ is hindered and weakened. This lesson, hopefully, will motivate each one of us in the responsibility of helping the needy. Now, the law of Moses was rather precise and very strict regarding duties to those who had worldly possessions and their responsibility toward those who were poor and needy. The law of Moses was demanding, and the law of Christ is no less demanding. For instance, when brethren met in Jerusalem to discuss the relationship of the Gentiles to the law of Moses, and letters were sent to teaching the truth that the Gentiles are not obligated to that law, and that the gospel was for all nations, the brethren were encouraged to preach the gospel to the Gentiles and to remember the poor. Galatians 2 and verse 10 reports on that meeting. Only they would that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 17 and 18, But whoso hath this world's goods, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Can it be possible to love God and be unconcerned for the needy of this world? Ephesians 4 and verse 28, Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, notice, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Friend, this is a characteristic of being a Christian. There is no question as to the will of God regarding this matter, but disciples of Christ will be found helping the needy. Regretfully, caring for the needy has caused disturbance and division in the church even in our time. This is because some have desired to disrupt the church in the performance of this duty by imposing rules and regulations which God has not imposed. And at the same time, there have been those, under the guise of benevolence, who have taken the church into activities which are not the work of the church. Both extremes have made havoc of the peace and hindered benevolence. It is always commendable for brethren to make sure they are loyal to the teaching of Christ. But we should neither go beyond what is written, nor attempt to bind what is not. It is just as wrong to make a law where God has not made one, as it is to loose what God has bound. And while some erroneously oppose the church supporting homes for orphans, others have led the church into money and profit-making adventures for housing of the elderly, which in no manner could be described as benevolent and charitable work with which the church is charged. When God has authorized something to be done, but has not delivered unto us the details in expediting what he commands, we must exercise our own judgment within the framework of what is authorized and get the job done. I do not see why this is such a difficult thing for us to understand. God has not authorized building and maintaining profit-making institutions for the church, nor has he specified every detail in providing homes for the homeless. I have yet to have anyone show me a system for providing a home for the homeless without a home, an institution that is separate and apart from the church. The home and the church are simply not the same organization. Now, why is that so hard to see? It ought not be hard for people to see that providing housing for those who have means to provide for themselves is certainly not a charitable and a benevolent work. I fail to see why this is so difficult to grasp. James 1:27, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now these words were written to Christians who were familiar with the elaborate rituals of the Jewish faith. It was easy for them to get the wrong impression as to the real significance and true value of religion. Never has it been God's will for people to attend merely to the outward observances and rituals and show no concern and feeling for others and their needs. Even in the Old Testament, such as in Micah chapter 6, this was true. They were taught not to come before God with burnt offerings and sacrifices and at the same time forget doing justly, being loving, being kind, walking humbly. An emphasis is placed on the emptiness and the vanity of form and ceremony without application of the faith in daily life, especially toward others. Now, James does not mean that caring for the fatherless and the widows is all there is to having an acceptable faith and an acceptable religion. But one cannot have pure and undefiled religion without practical demonstrations of it and rendering service to others, especially the unfortunate. There have been those who insist that this instruction is exclusively to the individual Christian and is not authority for the church to assist the needy. This seems so absolutely absurd that we wonder why anyone subscribes to an idea that would prohibit the church from helping the needy. The fact of the passage is, here is a definition of pure and undefiled religion. And it does not matter whether you have in mind a person's individual faith or the faith practiced by the church. It's simply a definition, and it is plain. Just why anyone would prefer a church to have a religion that is not pure and undefiled, I've never been able to fathom. Religion is either pure and undefiled, or it's impure and defiled. Which kind should the individual have? And which kind should the church have? Can a church practice pure and undefiled religion, or must it refrain from practicing that kind of religion? Now the word visit. It involves rendering aid with sympathy, compassion, and benefit. In Psalm 68 and verse 5, a father of the fatherless and a judge of widows is God in his holy habitation. Friend, the church is the habitation of God, Ephesians 2:22. And it is the characteristic of God to be mindful and helpful for the fatherless and the widows. To be otherwise is to be different from God. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. Now this is not hard to understand. Those who have needs in their own families are the ones who have the first responsibility to provide for them. The families have that duty first. The church ought not assume provision for those who have the capacity to provide for themselves or for their own people. The church can and should assume responsibility for the widow indeed, who is described as one who is desolate. There are those who have expressed such an anti-Christian attitude that they will allow a person to starve before they would spend 1 cent of the funds in the treasury of the church to provide for the needy if the needy person had relatives. But relatives do not always provide as they ought. They have the duty, but they do not always do their duty. Shall we allow faithful women who are in need, whose relatives will not provide for them, exist in her desolation? Why, such a thought is legalism and lawmaking carried to the extreme. The church does have the charge to provide for those who are in need, and the duty is clear. Furthermore, Galatians 6, 9, and 10, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap, if we faint not. As we have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Here Paul encourages the churches of Galatia, the ones to whom this epistle was sent, not to grow weary and not be tired in doing good works, facing an evil world day by day, offering and countering persecution, there was a temptation to abandon the effort. But we cannot become slack in doing the things that we should do. As opportunity presented itself, these brethren were to do good to all men, with special emphasis upon doing good for brethren. Unfortunately, some have evidently read that Paul said, exclusively to the household of faith. But this was not exclusively for brethren that these churches could and should render service and do good. To restrict in this manner the charitable and benevolent deeds of the church exclusively to brethren is a false idea. It would eliminate almost every orphan and fatherless child, since many, probably most, would not even be of an age of accountability. Little wonder that those who hold such an erroneous view are considered to be anti-orphan people, though they deny it. Keep in mind that these words were written to churches, not just to individuals who made up the churches. I find it strange that some who contend this is exclusively for the individual and exclusively for the brethren to go up to a few verses and find authority for the church to support those who preach. They do this from the treasure of the church, but inconsistently deny the support of the needy from the same treasury. There are those who have adopted such a position that they would allow money from the treasury to be spent to buy fertilizer for the preacher's lawn, but would deny 1 cent to be spent for a needy orphan or a non-Christian from the same treasury. Can anyone seriously consider that this is the attitude and the spirit of Christ? Matthew 25:34-40 teaches the Lord's attitude toward doing benevolent work. There is presented in this chapter the judgment scene. Having earlier warned of the destruction of Jerusalem in chapter 24, and having taught concerning his return, the third major lesson is the judgment scene. The parable of the 10 virgins teaches the need of being ready for these things that were to come. The parable of the talents teaches us how we can get ready by properly using what we have available. Then there is the comparison of those who were saved and those who were lost. In this last comparison, this particular comparison and presentation, nothing evil was mentioned as far as sins committed. The ones called goats were not charged with lying or adultery or stealing or such like. Their problem rested in their failure to do good things for those in need. Proverbs 19:17, "He that hath pity on the poor lendeth unto the Lord." Those who heard words of acceptance had performed deeds of charitable and benevolent action on others. Now these points are deserving of our most serious consideration, dear listener. Living a life in service to others is a part of the Christian life as much as being faithful in the worship services. Our duty is clear and our accountability is unquestionable. May it be that the Lord's church will gain a reputation among all people as people who are compassionate, who are sympathetic, who are helpful to those in need, those who need the charitable and benevolent actions of others. Indeed, this is the way we can help to discharge our duty and also encourage others to become children of God. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.